This is February 28th, and the next meeting is on March 21st, 1993, in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Good morning, Bartholomew.
Well, then, good morning, my friends. And yes, let's have a little bit of laughter. You know, laughter is good for the soul. Otherwise, you can forget that the point of living is to have a blissful experience of life moment to moment. You can forget that the purpose is to spend as many moments as you can moving away from and disidentifying with your ongoing drama, and so identify with something vaster, freer, and more deliciously exciting than the mundane events of your life. That's that. Now, I would like to talk about various things today that became very clearly present in our recent trip to California. When we were there, the overwhelming tension in the psyche of the group in the workshop, you see, at whatever workshop you attend or whatever meeting such as this, there is always one overriding tension in the psyche, meaning that most of you have one particular vibratory place where you come together, which is why we hope you leave saying, the windbag was talking to me today. And the more of you that do this, it is a reflection of the fact that you are really open books to the powers of awareness, not in the mundane sense of what you did last night or what you did yesterday, whatever, not in that sense, but in the deep sense of where your energy is most tense, where it has the most difficulty loving itself, where it has the most difficulty loving other and being in love with your own life. Because, my friends, really, life was meant to be a loving, ongoing, exploding excitement. And many of you have forgotten, so I would like to remind you. Life was meant to be an ongoing, overwhelmingly dynamic excitement. This does not mean it was meant to have no difficulties, that all of the roads were meant to be paved with happiness and hearts and unicorns and rainbows. That is not the intention. But the intention is, which has been the thrust of our work all these years, is to come to that place that acknowledges that two amazingly interesting, please hear the word, interesting things are going on at the same time. If I might point out, many of you have become transfixed with one of these and have tended to ignore and therefore discard the living intention of the other. So, please come in, everyone, by all means. So, as we begin to understand that you live on at least two levels at once, and when you begin to incorporate that deeply within you as a reality, moment by moment, then you begin to experience the energy shifts that are possible at all times, no matter what is going on in your life. Now, the obvious thing, and the one that has got your deepest attention, of course, if I could be a little bit impolite, is the ongoing drama of your life. You see, the drama of the incarnation that you have undertaken to explore. It's not a duty, my friends. It's an exploration taken on with your wholehearted, delightful, capricious agreement. Yes, this I will explore. And when you learn that that is only one part of what is really the fullness of the choices here, then you begin to, two things happen. One, you begin to look at the drama of your incarnation with a lot less intensity, because you will learn something very clearly, and this you all know. And as I say these words, go inside yourselves and find the place that is nodding in agreement. You know that you are going to live through this. You know that you are going to live through this life. You know that when it ends, you will continue on after this life. You will know it's as if you have finished a book and put it aside and then sit in the ruminating space of a vaster awareness and contemplate the various chapters and the meaning of the chapters and the flow. And perhaps you will begin to see, which we hope you do before you decide to close the book, begin to see the flow and the meaning and the exciting, magnificent choices that you made all along that led you to wherever you are at the end of this experience. Now, When you begin to see this lifetime as a magnificent, exciting adventure novel, rather than some tragedy that belongs on the stage for everyone to view, you see, when you understand that it is an ever-shifting something that is only meant to be partial of your life, then you begin to ask, well, where's the rest of it? Now, we have told you this in so many ways. Let us just, once again, go through the basics. In this California workshop, the tension that was holding their awareness in deep focus so that many, not all of them, so that many of them were not able to relax enough to become aware of the light again. The tension that was in the psyche of many of the people in this workshop that was holding them in a space of tension that kept their awareness off of the letting go so they could experience the light is, in California terms, concern over the collapse of their state. You know, they've had many, many really terrifying predictions. And the interesting thing is that when it's all over, it's called the Bay of Tranquility, isn't it? And interesting name as a sideline. But all of the earth changes. And then on top of it, as even more immediate as the ones that don't perhaps care too much about that, is this imminent collapse of the stock market and all of their finances. So here we have a room full of wonderful people all longing to experience the light directly, and all they can think about really is how are they going to keep their money together to keep their children alive. I don't mean selfishly, I want a BMW and I want this. No, how am I going to feed my children? How am I going to keep my family safe? How am I going to take care of what seems to be tremendous change coming? And then the question was asked absolutely directly and cannot be avoided. Was there anything that this part of awareness could say about the possible potential for such changes in that area? And I will tell you, as I said to them, there is no way I would be your friend if I did not say there are things coming. Does that mean that all of these dire, dour predictions are going to happen? I very sincerely doubt that. On the other hand, can we say, and if you've opened your eyes in the last few years, I think you will see this as well, there is tremendous shifting and changing going on this planet in various realms, in various parts of awareness, and it's as if the whole fabric of human consciousness has decided to see, this isn't God that's doing this, you know, and it isn't nasty Mother Nature that's doing this. This is a combination of magnetic and magnificent forces coming together, and changes are afoot. And the thing that you need to understand, please, today is you can pray until you are purple that these changes will not take place. And if they are to take place, they will. So the question that we bring to you today, which was brought at this magnificent meeting of beautiful people, was what do you do? And so the simplicity of the morning is, what do you do? Now, those of you who have loved ones out there, you understand your own tension. But I want those of you that don't, those of you that have nothing to do with that, to address within yourself the question, if all of that happens, you know it is going to have a tremendous effect on your life, certainly in a financial matter, and whatever it might be. And if nothing else happens, the whole fabric of the psyche of this country is going to wobble. You cannot hit this part of the net and not have a motion over here. Just as the web of life, what moves and shifts over here, absolutely affects what happens over here. It is one piece. This unit of human consciousness is one exciting, expansive, delightfully magnificent, creative whole. And whether you are conscious of the connection, whether you are even conscious inside of yourself of the potentials of the next few years, there is a part of you that absolutely knows. Now, what do you know? You know, if you get very quiet, that there are two things going on, and this we go back to the diagram earlier presented. Your conscious mind, the part of you that is a human being, that has experienced life on this planet, in whatever way you have, knows one thing. Living is dangerous to your health. And you know this with all of your being. And if you do not go on humorously recognizing this, then you find yourself living in some kind of a fearful cocoon that keeps saying, "Dear God, I don't care about life. I just don't want displeasure. I don't want to be uncomfortable. I don't want to be afraid. I don't want to be human." The essence of the human, which is that part of this exciting adventure, the human part is filled, excuse me, I'm sorry, is filled, is filled with this fear. It has as its basic component of electricity, of motivation, of change, often comes through two poles, and you know them both. What are the two things that move you? You move toward pleasure and away from pain. Those are the two, if we could put it, the two batteries that run this particular experience. And so you find yourself, as you begin to acknowledge that you are a human, and you never need to ask why me, because you know why me, because you are a human, and whatever is your part of this magnificent adventure is yours. And when you begin to realize that when the fear arises, that this is a natural motion of these two polarities that keep life moving on this planet. And as you begin to not fight one or the other, you see, you don't fight the pleasure as much. But if you're watching carefully, in the midst of the pleasure, whatever it might be, if you're watching carefully, the opposite arises almost instantaneously. Oh my God, what if I lose it? A beautiful child is born and you are immersed in the bliss of that. And then the next moment the fear arises. Oh, please keep this one safe. You're in the midst of a magnificent romantic moment and all is one, and then it arises. What if I lose this? What if this feeling is no longer mine? As you begin to feel the exaltation of your health as you move, as perhaps in your 20s, down a street full of vibrancy and charismatic pleasure and power, if you're watching very carefully, right behind that comes, but how long will this last? As these two ride, they ride each other over and over yet again in the ways and means of your daily life. Now, I want to tell you frankly, and please don't get too upset, there is a way to ride that wave of ever-changing up and down so that it appears to you as an energy field in motion, that it has pleasure to it, that it has a magnificent sensation that is, please pardon the word, exciting to you. In the midst of the most dour and dark experiences, should you choose to look for it, you will find a part of the being rising in anticipatory excitement. Ah, this is one of those big moments in life, and you feel it. Now, there's a part of you that is terrified and said, "Get out of here. This isn't what I had in mind. Out." And there is another part that says, "I'm ready. Help me all you can. Show me the way. I am willing." And as you begin to look for that part in you that is excited by and wants to truly experience change without the fear that goes with change, you will begin to learn a lot of mysterious secrets. Now, the truth of things is this, and I hope you do feel this in yourself. On the one hand, you say, "I don't want change," and I want to tell you something, you are lying. Do any of you want to stay exactly as you are in the life that you are in now forever? How about eternity? Just the way you are now. Same house, same friends, same health, same food, same life, same emotions. Would not this bore you? You see, because this is where the human needs to move into its depth. The depth of the human psyche is it lives and exalts in change. Now, you say, "I don't mind change as long as I move from lesser to more." I don't mind if I have a little and then get, you know, a lot. What I don't like is to have a lot and then have it move to a little, you see. Now, you understand, if you are at all breathing, and you know one thing all of you are doing mutually in this room is you are breathing. And as you begin to feel this breath, when you begin to see it as the master teacher, which is not to say that many of you that have teachers should not keep them. That is not the point. But the master teacher is the breath. And when you begin to experience that if you hold the in-breath, you will pass out. And if you hold the out-breath, you will pass out. This tells you something about the magnificent rhythm of living. And that when you begin to exultate in just the motion of the feeling of the breath, another way, when you begin to allow yourself to just clearly feel the rising of the fear and then watch for it, and the ending of the fear. You see, you have this idea that there's fear, 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 fear. Well, you know, it's just not true. Just as there's no in-breath, 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 as is with all of these things, when you're paying attention, they rise and they fall. You feel fear, then you feel boredom, then you feel joy, then you feel hungry, then you feel tired, then you feel a lot of things. And when you are in a dark period of your life, the tendency is to just pretend to yourself that you are experiencing one thing only. And I want you to know that you are not. And I do not care how difficult the situation you are in. At the same time, and I say this with all the love that I can, because some of you have been in very difficult situations, and this is not to in any way denigrate the difficulty of it, but when you begin to understand that you can feel, even in the midst of the intensities, some lessening of it and the appearing of something other within just a few moments. I don't mean 6 weeks, 6 months, 6 years. I don't even mean 6 hours. If you are paying attention, you will find that within the period of 1 hour, you have flowed from endless possibility to endless possibility, to other feeling, to other emotion, to other expectation, to other desire. It is constantly going on. The belief that you just adhere to one concept, one feeling, one perception, and one belief, and don't let it go, is faulty. Example? Many of you, when you get into illnesses or to emotional loss, which are, I think, the two that often are the most difficult, to lose something in emotional sense, either through whatever it could be, or death, or whatever, or to somehow have your health begin to disintegrate or deteriorate, whatever you perceive that as, that is very easy to now call yourself someone who is ill. Or to call yourself someone who has been abandoned, or someone who is no longer lovable, or whatever label that you have put on that. And then you take a lot of energy, both verbal with your friends and verbal to yourself, running around and sticking that label on yourself all day long. Refusing to admit the 98% of the other moments when that was not your overwhelming feeling of yourself. If you're paying attention to yourself when you get in your car and drive, you cannot think of yourself just as an ill person. You are an excited, living being moving through life in a way with a purpose and a plan and something. Now, as you begin to look at the other things and to acknowledge with that same attention, oh, I'm thinking that now. Oh, I'm feeling that now. Oh, now, that is, pardon me, this is called the Bartholomew work because it's work. And the working is in what I've just stated. And this is where many people lay down and say, no, no, I can't do it. God has to do it for me. Well, if you know how to talk God into doing it for you, good for you. You don't need to be here today. But if you don't happen to be one of those, if you happen to be someone who senses that there is something in your life that has to do with bringing that awareness into full flower, then these are the people I would like to speak to. And it is work in the sense that you have to be paying attention to your own life. You have to be paying attention to your thinking. I mean, literally, you have to say, ah, I'm thinking that again. Your fear comes up over your situation. Ah, I'm thinking that again. Ah, and then go on to something else. Ah, I'm feeling that again. Oh, I see, I'm being absolutely transfixed by that desire again. Oh, I see. And there is nothing else except this sweet attention. It is this gentle watching. And when the watching softens. You go back to the simplest of things, which is the master teacher, which is the breath. You simply feel breath rising and falling. You relax into the moment with the breath, and you find yourself beginning to experience the second part of consciousness. Now, it is this second part of consciousness that contains the excitement and the anticipation of whatever events have been given to you by your vast, magnificent, wise self. These assignments that you have been given, you know, are not, you know, you weren't in the wrong line and just got the wrong assignment, you see, as though some of you might look at it that way. It is your magnificent, if I could even use the word, your holy assignment. It is, your life is your holy assignment. It was assigned to you because of the intrinsic ability for it to bring you to wholeness. And when I say wholeness, most of you don't really understand what I mean by that. And in the last few of whatever time we have left, we will need to look at that much more fully. But for this morning, to simply say that your understanding of wholeness is to begin to feel, when you are feeling fear over whatever it might be, I absolutely challenge you at that moment to just quietly breathe and go inside and look for that place that is not afraid, that is not tense, that is excited, that is anticipatory, that is in some way ready. You know, you have all of the speeches in your minds, and the speeches, many of them are real. And one of them is, you are never given more than you can handle. Well, of course not, because it is you that's giving it to you. You know what you can or cannot handle. So there is no question that if it is in your life, there has been a congruity between you and your deep self and the events. There is a magnificent, excuse me for using these delightful words for what might be very difficult experiences. There is a dance between the two parts, the part that is polarized and has fear as one of its components, and that vast other part that has nothing to do with fear, that knows that every pulsating moment of your life contains this excitement and even an abandoned delight. One of the things to think about when you think about what are you going to feel like when you are allowing yourself to feel the light of the God self, or however you work with it, is this: I could only say you abandon yourself to delight. You abandon yourself to delight. The yogis call it bliss. You can call it what you wish, but it's like that. It is far past this word happiness. It is far deeper. Happiness has as its connotation unhappiness. But there is this wondrous abandonment to life in its fullness. And you know, have you noticed that the great ones, after they become realized, their lives didn't go on so beautifully, did they? I mean, just think of your poor friend Christ, you see. Here he's going along, doing all right, and he was illumined, and he was wise, and look what happened to him. And you look at Buddha, and the same thing. He was dispensing wisdom all over the Orient, absolutely magnificent teacher for how many, 20-some years? Somebody hands him a bad piece of meat, and he dies. You see, there are no guarantees that as you become enlightened, you are going to be running around with a happy life on the external. But if you have studied any of the work of the truly enlightened, what you hear is, in the midst of that pain, in the midst of all of the, whatever the physical circumstances might have been, their overriding, completely omnipresent feeling is the bliss. And it is very difficult for the polarized psyche to contemplate feeling bliss and despair at the same time. You think that they are opposites, and that if you are feeling despair, you cannot allow yourself to feel bliss. That you have to somehow get out of your despair, get into happiness, and then you will find bliss. Have you noticed it hasn't worked? Because as soon as you finish one unhappiness, lo and behold, somebody comes around and says, I'm ready to give you your next taste of pain. Are you ready? You see, it's the idea that somehow you have in your mind that you have to move away from your unhappinesses, to make them right, to make... Have you noticed how difficult it is to keep all of your relationships happy at the same time? Have you noticed? It is a very difficult thing. If you please the parent, you displease the child. If you please your parents, you displease your children. If you displease, if you please your lover, you displease most everybody else, probably. You see? Have to have a little fun. It's very difficult to please all of the human beings in your life. And as you begin to relax and realize how much of your time is being spent that way, you begin to get a bit of humor around the situation. You begin to feel the innate humor and tension. We're back to the tension in the psyche. And when this tension is prevalent in whatever way, it has the ability to be so interesting to you, so full of energy, that you have a greater difficulty in stepping back from it and beginning to experience what I consider to be that magnificent abandoned bliss that is ever present. I will tell you again, in the midst of whatever difficulty, no matter how deep you are in, there is the bliss. Absolutely there with your life exactly as it is. The reason that many of you have not experienced it is you have not been trained. Let me say this again. You have not been trained in a society which I hope comes into fruition very soon. There will be enlightened elders, or, you know, an elder is anybody that's older than somebody that's younger. That's the only definition of an elder. There will be a group of elders who have as their basic acknowledged experience that bliss is an ever-constant state, and that likes and dislikes, getting your needs met or not, having displeasure or pleasure, whatever is going on at the same time, the magnificent wonder of bliss is present. Now, again, back to the fears that arise in such situations as in the state of California. What do these people do? What is the way that anyone who has any sense of fear, what do they do about this? Now, if you are being honest with yourself this morning, my friends, and I hope that you are, you will realize that you are riddled with fears. Your life may be fine as it is today, but there's tomorrow, and then there's 10 years from now, and there's always the horror of the potential possible. And it just hovers there in part of the psyche, and I want you to know that it's partly there because of this dual action of pleasure and pain. I am telling you, unfortunately, that you are probably never going to get rid of that, and you don't have to. How are you going to stay alive and aware and allow the energies of fear, which are sometimes very helpful to you, to guide you and teach you if you have decided that they have nothing of value to you? Example, someone asked in the California situation, what should she do herself personally? I think she was wanting me to tell her to sell General Electric and buy something else. Whatever the intention, the answer was simply this. We have been haranguing you for lo these many years now, 14 or so, to begin to have a disciplined approach to your daily moment so that you are in touch with it, and so that you have moved away from incessant thinking and gone to breathing and experiencing the bareness of the moment with bare attention, without fancy thinking or postulating or fantasizing, just experiencing this moment as it is. That simple technique is the technique that will allow you, please hear, allow you to recognize that in the midst of this spaciously magnificent eternal moment, spaciously magnificent, bliss-filled eternal moment, there happens to be at the time fear. And when you begin to look for the bliss, just looking for it, hearing for it, breathing for it, not thinking for it. If you could have thought it, you would have had it by now. It is the knowing that somehow in this moment, without having to get rid of anything else, there is this experience that allows you then to feel fear. And when you feel the fear from this vaster breathing perception, you begin to feel an urgency that propels you in a certain direction. What do I mean? It is absolutely foolish to think that everyone in the state of California should pack up and move. That is absolutely foolish. It is also absolutely foolish that everyone who is invested in the stock market should give up their whatevers and do something else. What then is the reality of what we're talking about? Your life, your dharma, your Tao, your experience is your own. And you have, right alongside with the fear, is the motion of the fear that tells you what is the appropriate action to take around the situation. Now, where you get trapped is that you think it's best for you to not lose your money, to not lose your love affair, to get instantly well. You believe that the only intrinsic value in being aware is to find out how to extricate yourself from a painful situation. I wish that I could tell you that that is always the case, but it is not always the case, because for many of you, it is that fear of this event itself that is the magnificent mover that moves you to not to the place where you necessarily amass more money, but where you begin to take your own life seriously and begin to realize that it is up to you to make yourself blissful, that your money and your health and whatever it might be, your success in the stock market, are not going to make you happy. Bliss makes you happy. Everything else is transient and rises and falls. The bliss around your new car lasts until you hear the first squeak. And then it's finished. The love affair is gone. So, you know, you all know this, with all the endless little baubles, all right? And you say, yes, but my health is different. And I say, oh, yes, really? You know, as soon as you're ill, then there's the focus, and that's nice. And then you get well, and then forgetfulness. Forgetfulness. I am not saying that you have to stay ill to stay awake. I am saying that there is a great possibility that when you realize that whatever tension is in your life is making you uncomfortable, that uncomfortable state is what is going to say to you, wouldn't you prefer bliss? It isn't going to say the magic wand will be moved and this difficulty will be removed. I am telling you, and please hear me, I know you don't like this, I don't care if your finances improve. I don't care if you get the love of your life, or the car of your life, or the job of your life. I want you to get the bliss of your life. And that is the only job that I have, because it is the only thing in the end that is going to prepare you for the ongoing experience of consciousness. You are going to die. You are going to die. And when I would be no friend to pretend that you cannot absolutely learn the process of letting go into creative dying by doing the simple things that we are instructing you now. When you die, you will make a choice. And that is what I'm getting you ready for, however else you want to talk about it. Whether you come in with a full or empty pocketbook is irrelevant. Whether your children love and adore you is irrelevant. What is relevant at the moment of your separation from your existing life is the understanding of your own consciousness, the understanding of your life. That means how much bliss have you allowed? How much vastness, how much bigness have you allowed? Or are you very, very, very caught up in the drama of the life that you do not know and feel the ever-changing motion of that life and begin to rely on the bliss that infuses it and transcends it and upholds it every moment? That is the choice. You cannot make it in the last moment. This is why people come to me in tremendous extremity and they want to find the bliss within the pain, but they have not trained themselves. Ladies and gentlemen, you're in training. You know, this is bliss training 101. Huh? And the necessity is to simply understand that out of the ongoing looking for, breathing into, waiting for, and being expectant of the ever-radiant bliss or light, whatever you want to call it, If you begin to understand that that is what we're asking for you to live your life like that, you will begin to experience all kinds of tangential things. Example, if you are worried about money, but you realize that it is up and down, and remember that what you're really looking for is this bliss that's ever radiant, then you will begin to step back from this incessant mental chatter and begin to feel and breathe on a deeper level. And in so doing, and I want you to understand what really happens, you create a vaster space. You literally, psychically, create a vaster space around you in which to breathe. Every time you turn your awareness to the moment, into the breath, and to the seeing and hearing without the chatter of mind, when you allow things to be as they are, when you just sit in it as it is, you begin to create a very vast space around you, which allows things that might have been very painful and full of pressure to be experienced with a tremendous amount of ease and openness. And the same problem may appear yet again in your life, and you say, oh my, here we are again. But if you're paying attention, your response to it is much vaster and much more open. This does not take a lot of linear time. What it takes is a lot of moment-to-moment silencing into the quiet of the moment. That is what it takes. We have said this until you are wanting to scream, but in the end, it is nothing else to be said. And as you begin to understand that the creative art of dying is something that you do every day, then you don't have to be so afraid of the great big ending bang. You are frightened of an ending moment, and I want to tell you, my friends, that you have gone through endlessly painful moments, far more painful than that last one is going to be, far more frightening. In fact, when you begin to examine yourself very carefully, many of you might find an interesting thing. Asked if you would mind dying, you say no, because part of you will be very pleased to get out of this mess. Whether you are pretending that you want to live forever in this life on this planet, that is not the case, because there are vast parts of your being that know there are deep other realities that are magnificently spacious, and you realize, just as you go to bed and sleep at night, it's nice to get a breather, and you begin to understand that the idea that this one ending moment is going to be so excruciating, you begin to understand in the spaciousness of your own life as you live it, that you have died again and again and again. People have died, gone out of your life. Things that you cherished have gone out of your life. Experiences have come and gone. People have betrayed you. You have betrayed others. It's gone on endlessly, endlessly. And when you really begin to look on your life as a series of deaths, very, very excruciating deaths, and you remember in the past that pain, and you look at your life today and ask, is that pain still here, or has it tremendously mitigated through the years? When you begin to understand that this death process is something that you are doing endlessly, then you begin to be less fearful and have less attention on what is to be at the ending of the whole beautiful series of events. The understanding, my friends, the deep understanding that you have lived heroically and courageously through endless difficulties that will be far, far harder than your ending time, begins to give you trust in your own ability. It gives you trust in this process of your life. There is no one in this room that hasn't suffered. And having suffered, you have gone through a process of, if I could get biblical here for a minute, redeeming that suffering. And what does that mean? That means you redeem something simply by acknowledging the pain of it, going into and understanding it as best you can, dealing with it in whatever way you can, at the end letting it go, and a part of you says, ah, I understand why it came into my life. I understand what I have learned. I understand the strength that I now feel. And you begin to trust this process. Someone asked me, how do you trust? The only way that you can begin to trust, not what? You can't trust other people. Do you know, you can trust other people to do what they want. I think basically when you get down to the simplicity of it, people do what they want, you see? And so that you can trust. Whatever they're doing, they want to do it, and that's why they're doing it. You see, whether you like why they're doing it is irrelevant. They are doing what they are doing because they want to do it. And you can absolutely trust them to do that. All right? So forget about them because they will do what they want. So who's left? There's you. And that's all that there is left, which is you. Which is, how do you trust? And what are you saying? How do you trust your small self? Your fear-based, egotistically... collective life that wants this today and that tomorrow, that likes green tomorrow, orange the next day, that, you know, today loves ice cream, tomorrow can't stand it because it makes you fat. I mean, you know, endlessly you change your mind about everything. So what is there to trust in that? You can trust that you are constantly changing, that your point of view changes, that your likes and dislikes change. Today you love, tomorrow you hate. Today you hate, tomorrow you love. You like this, you don't. It goes on endlessly. It goes on endlessly. How can you trust that? That is not what we're talking about trusting. The excitement of understanding what trust is comes when you finally realize that what you want to do is trust that two things. One, that what you are going through has in some way a purpose, that it isn't a meaningless, you know, that story that Shakespeare could be written by 100 monkeys typing for 100 years, I don't even know. If you believe that, then this talk isn't going to mean much to you. But if you, so the one thing that you want to really deeply trust is that this situation, this pain, this confusion, this darkness, this no knowing of where to go, has intrinsically a magnificent purpose. That you want to know. And the second thing is that you need and desperately want to know that there is a continuity of awareness that is filled with the ability to meet anything that should happen to you. To meet it with fullness, with light, with understanding, with compassion and power. That is what you want to know. You don't really want to know that your life is going to be heavenly until you die. If you were to be asked that, in your honesty of your soul, you would have to say, what you want is to know. You want to know the magnificent wholeness of your own integrity, your own power, your own ability to trust, your own ability to be able to move deeply into anything that should come to you. And that is absolutely there. It has nothing to do with you. It is that other part of the life that we began with. It is that place of consciousness. It is the eternal present. It is the bliss. It is the compassion. It is the force of life without form. It is the force of life without idea, the force of life that you have come to see as the light of consciousness. And it permeates everything at all times, fully, completely, and totally. And that is absolutely the truth. And it is that knowing, the trusting that the light is there, that is what your heart is aching for. Trusting that the light is there. In the midst of whatever is happening, the light is there. You say it in things like, I don't want to feel that I am alone. And then some of you have teachers who you trust. Some of you have magnificent historical wise ones that you trust. Well and good. Yes, yes. But at the same time, you have to know something more intimate, something more personal. You have to know you, that you can trust you, you. That you can trust your breath, your awareness, to be able to be clear, to be ever awake, to be ever compassionate and ever knowing in the midst of whatever is happening. You have to know that you absolutely have the light within, and it is what you are, and it is present in every decision. It's present in every event. That is what you need to know. If you know that, then do you care where you go? Do you care where your Tao leads you? Do you care where your small-minded karma takes you? Do you care if the drama ends A or B? What is it that you care about? You care about that magnificent knowing inside of you that the light is ever pulsatingly present. People often say, you have to trust yourself. I want you to look at that very carefully. That is not what we mean. You have to trust yourself. What we mean is you have to become so intimately aware of that light, that bliss, that power, that clarity that is ever present in the silence in your breath, that you will know absolutely that there is something far vaster. Please hear this. Something far vaster that is directing all of your magnificent experience. That you create it in beautiful harmony with an energy field that is pulsating with the knowing of the wisdom of what is happening. And when you begin to know that you are not in this alone, when you begin to trust the thing that is truly trustworthy, then you begin to relax and you do not demand that your life look trustworthy to you. A trustworthy life in the egotistical sense usually means, I want you to reflect for me the person that I pray that I am. And if you do not reflect that person to me, then I have difficulty in loving you. My friends, that is your job. It is your job to begin to reflect to yourself, not through your thoughts, not through your actions, not through doing it right, not through being a perfect little somebody. That is not my point. All of those things, your actions, your good, your bad, they rise and they fall and they constantly change. That is not what we're directing. We are saying that there is an overriding, magnificent life and light and power that holds it all. And as you begin to stop trusting the untrustworthy, can you really trust yourself to be honest at all times? It isn't even the job to always do good. To always do good. According to whose point of view? You see, when we get into this, we get very confused. And all of the people who yearn to have rules about how to do good, what they really are yearning for is to fall into the light that says there is a magnificent wholeness going on here. And you begin to trust the trustworthy, which is the power that moves in the moment. And you trust it because you begin to feel it. You begin to see it. In the words of the enlightened ones, you live in the sea of bliss. You are in that sea of bliss now. You do not have to do anything fancy to experience it. You just simply have to begin to hear that it exists. And if you'll just shut up, strange thing for this windbag to be saying, to just be silent in the magnificent quiet, not some dead silence like this, I'm silent, I'm dead, nothing's going on. When you move out of the mind, many of you think that there's nothing there. Oh, my dear friends, there is so much there when the mind is sweetly silent. I don't mean that you don't use the mind, of course you do. Your bank book would look disastrous if you didn't use your mind. You have to use your mind for mental things, but it is this endless, what can we call it? It's been called by someone emotional thought. That spins itself endlessly through your days and your nights. When you begin to understand the simplicity, the gaps between thoughts are immense. And it's in the gaps between those thoughts, as the gaps between the breath, that is where the magnificent silence is. Reside in those spaces as much as you can, and then you will know what trust means. And you will know what you're trusting and the absolute trustworthiness of your life, of your experiences, and most of all, you begin to appreciate your choices. You appreciate those choices that seem to you the most foolish, the most diabolical, the most painful. You begin to trust in the most difficult parts of your life. And that's when you begin to integrate. We talked about being whole. That's when you begin to approach wholeness, which means that there is no part of your life from beginning to where you stand now that you want out of your experience. You want to know and acknowledge and hold it all as absolutely, magnificently appropriate. The pain, the shame, the loss, the guilt, the self-pity, the anger, whatever it might be, all one whole piece. You experience your life whole. And in that experience, you understand why things happened as they happened. And you just sit there with tears of absolute awe rolling down your face. You have not made any mistakes. It is absolutely impossible for mistakes to take place. Confusion over why may be present. But please, there are no mistakes. And as you begin to trust the only thing that's trustworthy, which is the power of the silent, magnificent moment, you begin to understand. Without thinking, you begin to know. And then gratitude wells up in you for all of it. And an incredible sense of wonder at yourself as well. It isn't just you thank the great ones, you thank yourself as well. Well done. And you say it to yourself. You become whole. You join your love of the divine with the love of you. You begin to love all of your mistakes, your confusion, your doubts, your fears. You begin to love it all in some inexplicable way, and that is bliss. Nothing left out. And then the magic begins to happen, because then you begin to love everyone unconditionally, beginning with yourself. When you have pulled all of your life into one whole piece and said, good, 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 well done. When you know that, then you can look at every other life, no matter what it looks like from the outside, and you know, well done. That is the moment when you love everything without judgment, yourself included. And it is the most blissful feeling that a human being can experience. Well, thank you for listening. Those of you that would like to join us, 10 minutes of bliss, please.
Good morning again. Before we close for today, I'd like to pass along some workshop information. The two workshops that will be held in Taos this summer, and also answer some questions about the upcoming Santa Cruz workshop in Santa Cruz, California. The Santa Cruz workshop is the first totally silent workshop, silent as far as participants are concerned, that we have had. Bartholomew's talked about this for several years, hoping to gather a group of people that were really interested in deepening their experience of Bartholomew's teachings. People have asked us two questions about this workshop. The first being, is it really silent, and what does silent mean? Yes, it is really silent. And what that means is that the people attending the workshop will not be conversing with each other from Friday, March 27th at 10 p.m. until the workshop is over on Sunday around 4 p.m. Now, of course, if some emergency comes up where you have to talk to somebody, that is absolutely permissible. But in general, during the time that you are in the cabins at the workshop or during meals, silence will be maintained. Now, the reason for this is that doing a body of work over a weekend in silence will give you the opportunity not to have to worry about interacting, what you're going to say, how you're going to respond to people, And it will also give you the opportunity to internalize or really put into practice what you hear and learn during the weekend. This is maybe a new experience for some of you, and we're really recommending that unless you feel comfortable with this kind of deepening experience, please don't attend this workshop. We have the other question people have been asking is whether or not Bartholomew will be silent during this workshop. And the answer to that is no, Bartholomew will not be silent during this workshop. There will be discourse, there will be meditation, there will be exercises, there will be all of the wonderful energy that Bartholomew generates. One additional point is question and answer. If there are questions, people will write them down on pieces of paper, and Bartholomew will answer the written questions. So I think that takes care of Santa Cruz. The Santa Cruz workshop is March 27th and 28th. It's being held at the Sequoia Seminar Center, and people will be staying there Friday and Saturday nights. If you are interested in this workshop or have any questions about it, those of you that have already signed up, please feel free to call Darcy Thole or Sharon Swenson in Santa Cruz at 408-475-6617. Okay, now the summer workshops in Taos this year will be held on June 5th and 6th at the Mabel Dodge Lujan House. The conference center there is where we held the January workshop, and we will be holding the June workshop in the same location. Susan Cook and the staff at the Mabel Dodge House are going to continue to offer their package accommodation meals plan for this June workshop. So if you're interested in staying at Mabel Dodge, which is a very lovely bed and breakfast as well as a historic location here in Taos, the person to contact is Susan Chambers Cook, and the area code is 505-758-9456. If you wish to write Mabel Dodge Lujan House, P.O. Box 3400, Taos, New Mexico, 87571. And I believe what they are offering is two nights lodging, which would be Friday and Saturday night, and six meals. In other words, I think dinner, two breakfasts, and two dinners, two breakfasts, and two lunches. And I believe that's $130 per person to stay there. The cost of the workshop is $175 per person. Okay, now the second workshop this year will be held at the Austin House up in the Ski Valley. The dates are August 28th and 29th of this year. And we had a wonderful workshop there last year, very successful. That was also an in-house workshop. Now that particular workshop up there at the Ski Valley, people will be required to stay there. So please keep that in mind. They're also offering the same package that they did last year. And that includes meals and accommodations. The meals are two breakfasts, two lunch, and dinner Saturday night. The accommodations are either single or double. And the price for accommodations and meals for a single is $140 per person. For a double, $100 per person. There are only 8 single rooms available at the Austin House, so that will be on a first-come, first-served basis. The cost of both workshops is $175 with a $75 deposit. Please send your deposits for both workshops to me, Joy Franklin, P.O. Box 2996, Taos, T-A-O-S, New Mexico, 87571, and make your checks out to Vista Grande School. That's a tax-exempt organization. Now, for accommodations for the June workshop, please contact Susan Chamber Cook at the Mabel Dodge Lujan House directly. to set up your meals and accommodations if you wish to stay there. For the Austing House in August, those participants that are staying there, which is all of you, need to contact me about that. And how you can do it is just indicate the type of accommodation you want and send half. In other words, if you want a double, send $50. If you want a single, send $70. Please make note of the fact that accommodations for both Austing House and the Mabel Dodge House are for Friday and Saturday night. In other words, you will be staying there Friday night and Saturday night, and the workshop is Saturday and Sunday. If you wish to spend extra time at either place, please contact them directly for that, even for the Austing House. In other words, if you want to stay there Sunday night, you can arrange for that accommodation either beforehand or while you are at the workshop. When I receive your deposit, I will send a confirmation of your space in that workshop, and you will be receiving more detailed information about 3 weeks prior to each workshop. Thank you.